Welcome to Good for a Weekend,
the podcast where two friends talk about Taylor Swift
and share your spicy confessions.
I'm Cressy Cornis.
And I'm MK Ashford.
Our third ever Swiftie Confessions episode will be coming out on April 11th. It will be a very special episode because it's our 100th.
You have until April 1st to email us your Swiftie Confessions to gfaweekend@gmail.com. Please include what you'd like to be called as well and your preferred pronouns.
And if you're a new weekender, here's a quick explanation of what we're looking for in your Swiftie confession.
We want to hear your spiciest hot takes, embarrassing moments as a fan, unpopular opinions, hills that you would die on, your crazy fan theories, and anything else Taylor related that you'd like to confess to us.
Think of us as your specially appointed Swiftie therapist.
Did you weirdly like Taylor and Maddie Healy? Are you a me defender? Do you think 1989 is overrated? Are you a Joe Alwyn apologist? Whatever it is, we're listening.
We are accepting submissions now, right now. So be sure to send yours to gfaweekend@gmail.com by April 1st. All we ask is that you please include what you'd like us to call you as well as your preferred pronouns so we can discuss your confession properly.
And we're so excited to hear what you have to spill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Consequence Podcast Network. As we make our way closer to Bonnaroo 2023, we start to do a deep dive on some of the artists playing the farm. One of the biggest streaming successes of the year, selling out all over the country, and getting a major slot at Bonnaroo, Noah Kahan joins us today on the What Podcast. Barry Corder, Lord Taco, Brad Steiner, talking to Noah Kahan today. The What Podcast starts right now. You're always trying to do your best. Don't worry about what happens next. Cause it never ends. It's just begun. We crash into Welcome in to another What Podcast as we get closer to Bonnaroo 2021. Barry Corder, Lord Taco, one of the biggest artists of the moment that we have ever talked to on the What Podcast. You know, we've had some big ones. If you go do our, you know, like our festival lineup poster, we've got a pretty good lineup, don't you think, guys? But today, I don't know if we could find a more of the moment star than Noah Kahan. Today's star of the What Podcast.
I'm pretty excited.
Can we back up? What year did you say this is?
What did I say? Did I say 2022?
2021.
What did I say 2021 for? Did I really say 2021? Oh, my God.
Wow.
Jesus Christ. What is wrong with me?
I'm not judging, man. You could have said 1921.
It feels like we're.
I do love how
feels like we've been living 2021 for.
I feel
six
like
years,
I love how Barry did not catch that whatsoever.
No, I'm not judging.
Taco, the only one that's.
I don't even know what day it
Taco,
is.
Taco again, always the only one paying attention.
Well, that's a good point. I'm not listening to you.
Thanks, buddy.
So you could have said anything.
Thanks, buddy.
But yeah, no, it would have been.
I really can't believe I said 2021. I have no idea where that came from. No idea.
I love it.
Yeah. What have you guys been up to?
Yeah. Let's go back to 2021. It was a great year. Yeah.
What, I've been holed up in my basement for a year.
Let's
and
start
half.
This again. One of the biggest, the biggest Spotify artists of 2022 joining us today on the What Podcast. A massive star for us. I don't know how we got him. Noah Kahan. Barry, have you spent much time with the album, with the song, etc.?
I've been listening.
He was
all
just
day.
In. He was just in Chattanooga. Did you go to the show?
He's pretty good in 2023.
He's pretty good too, in 2023. Yeah, so far.
Are we going to do this?
Well, we don't have data. He was the top streaming artist of Spotify, or his top streaming song of Spotify.
No, I didn't go, and I'll tell you why. I didn't
because
go.
It was at
There's
night.
Two reasons I didn't go. That's one. And you didn't tell me about it until about 2 hours before when you said, go to the Signal. Noah's in town.
So?
I'm like, that's not going to happen. Well, I don't live like you, man.
Hey, there's only one way.
I got a nap. There's napping that has to happen. There's rides. You know,
Barry Corridor, there's only one way you're going to meet Bill Murray in this lifetime. Is taking up my life strategy of never saying no.
You're saying he's not coming to my house?
No. Bill Murray not coming to your house.
You know, look, I'm counting on you guys because you're such good friends. Uh-huh. You're going to bring him to my house.
I'll give him a call and leave him a message on his voicemail.
We got to go to Chattanooga. We got to go see
this
guy.
I'm taking a road trip to Chattanooga with Bill Murray. That is
we got to go see
the
this
worst
guy.
Buddy film of all time. So you have spent time with the album and the song then, huh?
Yeah, I have. I have, sure. I mean, it's big, right? I mean, the interesting voice. I love it. It's yes. I like it.
Very descriptive.
I don't know. I know. You caught me off guard. I'm trying to figure out how to describe it, and you caught me
Barry
off guard.
Barry just channeled Lord Taco just for a second. Whereas,
I did.
Yes.
It's good. It's good. Yes.
You're not wrong.
Well, I tell you, and I'm going to tell him this too because I'm going to fanboy for a moment. I get very obsessive over songs and bands. Like when I find it, when I hear it, and I am absolutely in love with it, I will do nothing but listen to it over and over and over and over until everyone around me is lost their mind. When I first heard Chaise Long from Wet Leg, it was literally on repeat for weeks. I have done nothing but listen to Stick Season day upon day upon day on repeat. My entire train ride into the city every day is 25 minutes of Stick Season. Why I'm listening to the same song over and over, I don't know. I mean, he's the top streaming artist of Spotify in 2022. 2023, I damn near probably have half the downloads or the streams of Stick Season. I love this song so much.
Yeah. No, that's the one. That's the one I was listening to. And I have so many questions for him that were related to it. That's why part of why you threw me off. I wasn't ready for your question.
Oh, well. Well, we can start over if you want to, or we can just, go back to 2021 if you need.
Let's go back to 2021.
No, I mean, tell me, why are you listening to it so much? I mean, I just started recently because you turned me on to it. Tell me about it.
I feel like it's earnest. I feel like it's honest. I feel like it's vulnerable. I don't know if it's a story about his own life, but it sure as hell feels like it was. It feels real enough to his life that he's letting us in. I always get really dorky when I get to songs that transport me into someone else's life experience, and I feel like I'm seeing everything that they're seeing at that very moment. The last song I can remember that did that to me was Pine Grove, Old Friends, that I felt like I was walking around in someone else's skin and clothes where I was seeing the world like them. And he does such an incredible job of painting pictures as well as a human being can. I love the way that James Vincent McMorrow tells stories. And, I immediately thought of that kind of storytelling when I listened to Noah. That's why I love it so much. I nerd out a little bit about it.
We've done this before on the show when we've had artists, those are the most poignant moments that I remember when we've had artists who come on and said, you know, I wrote this song because it was so personal to me and I never in a million years thought it would resonate with anybody else. And then it becomes their number one hit.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's why it's when people put themselves out there. That happens all the time, right?
It's a good question.
Because that's what we connect
with. I know
with.
This is a crazy thing to say, but I know I'm going to get roasted for this. Darius Rucker has this really great quote. When he was a shut up taco, when he wrote Letter Cry, he introduces it every Hootie and the Blowfish show. He introduces Letter Cry. He says this story. He goes, Bonnie Raitt one time told me that every songwriter has one great song in them, one great one. And this is my ode to Bonnie Raitt. And he talks about Letter Cry. But Bonnie Raitt's exactly right. Every great songwriter's got one brilliant one in them. And I do wonder how that is. And I'm going to ask him a similar question because I have a theory. I might be crazy about it, but, you know, we'll see.
That is so amazing you bring that up because I literally am staring at my screen trying to figure out the title of the Bonnie Raitt song that she just won the Grammy for.
Well, I mean, if you want to...
That whole show was all about, you know, new music, and then here comes a singer-songwriter who just puts her heart...
Yeah, but Barry...
Inside of an acoustic guitar.
I know.
Guitar. It's a great song.
I know,
song,
but may I... Look, I wish that we did a Grammy episode and I could, you know, let out all the secrets of the Grammy voter, but can I be totally? I mean, look, there are 350.
Are you gonna crush my heart?
A little bit. Just to pull the curtain back, there's about 350 voters. You know, the four main categories everybody's got to vote in, and then you have you only have 10 votes first and foremost. There are 200 categories, but you have to limit it to 10 votes. You have to also only vote. You have to vote in the four main categories: Artist of the Year, Song of the Year, Record of the Year, Best New Artist. You have to vote in those four. All 350 voting members have to, and then the rest of the six you get to sort of, you know, shift and shape wherever you want it to go. But they prefer you to be in your area of expertise. So when they opened up the nomination process and the nominees to 10 different nominees for Best New Artist, Best, you know, for the main categories, you're going to get splintered votes. You know, you've got probably 100 people vote or 75 people voting for, you know, let's put it this way. If there's 200 people voting, half of them are going to go to Beyonce. Half of them are going to go to Harry Styles. So then who's everybody's third favorite song probably is going to win in years like this.
Okay. All right. No. Wow. These things are just talking points. I get that. That's not what was not my point. I guess my point was the fact that she was even in the room is worth noting because it's a great song.
But at the same time, she's in the room because they throw a bone to the music purists every year. I mean, there's one of these in there every year. I mean, look, Midnight Beck won years ago. You know,
how do you do what you do? How do you not? How do you feel not just it?
Who said I didn't? Who said I didn't? But like the idea of like,
it's just gross.
All right, the idea that somebody like most of these Grammy winners. Like you take a
some
of these categories are only getting 25 votes, man. Okay. So the winner is getting 10, 12, 15.
It's like it's like Oscars and movies. They're bought, you know, the studio buy. I get that. I guess my point was it's a great song.
It is a good song.
It's a simple song. It's an old fashioned John Prine song, which is what she tried to write. I'm just glad it gotten, you know, attention.
Okay. Well, yes,
but
me too.
Now you're sitting there throwing poo-poo on it.
Okay. Who uses the word poo-poo?
Me. I'm going old school because it's Bonnie Raitt. I could have said caca.
Man, the words poo-poo and Bonnie Raitt, the same sentences. I'm using poo-poo because of Bonnie Raitt. I don't think that she wants to be associated with that, though.
Yeah. She didn't want
anyway,
to.
Anyway, but yes, it is a good song, and yes, it deserved the attention. I'm just saying that they throw music purists these kinds of things every year. And I'm shocked, honestly, that she won, but I'm trying to explain to you why she did. Votes are split four different ways for very, deserving songs, and she just happened to be, right above it.
No, I never for a minute believed that the entire voting block was a unanimous.
Well, I think it surprises most people that there's only 350 votes out there.
That is surprising. Yeah, that is surprising.
And you can only vote 10 times. There's only 10 votes that you can put in.
I would think most people think it's completely based on numbers. Like whoever had bazillion streaming wins.
Well, I mean, that's the reason why Justin Bieber has no Grammys. You know, it has nothing to do with streams. Right. It has to do with what
the Beatles have. I think the Beatles have one, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe, some tertiary ones. But, I get it. And I don't, I never get too excited about those things. They're all talking points. They're designed. They're like, Rolling Stones top 500. Mm-hmm. They're all about getting people like you and me to talk about it.
But yes, I'm very excited that she won. Don't get me wrong. I'm very excited about it. I love Bonnie Raitt. I love Bonnie Raitt. By the way, speaking of Bonnie Raitt, one artist that I'm surprised we haven't seen come back to Bonnaroo. I think that she was it 2003 or 4 she was there? I can't really remember. Maybe 6. But I would love to bring Bonnie Raitt back in one of those late afternoon tent shows.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
God, I love Bonnie Raitt.
That'd be great.
Right in that early evening, that John Prine slot. Where
the John Prine slot.
Yeah. Be terrific.
That's right. Who's the John Prine of this year, by the way? I know it's off the top of my head. Huh?
Oh. On the current list?
Why can't I think off the top of my head? There's a I'm not looking at the lineup right now. I'm sorry. All right, let's get into Noah. Noah Gahan on the Watt Podcast. Okay.
I think he's over on Zoom.
Yeah, do we need to reach out?
God, I hope not.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, it's Barry from the What Podcast.
Hey, it's Russ.
Hey, it's Brian, and we are giving away 2 tickets to Bonnaroo 2024. These are GA+, and they include camping. Russ, how do people get qualified?
We want to hear your top artists to play on the Bonnaroo 2024 lineup.
Call 423-667-7877 and tell us who we should check out. It's the What Podcast. Thanks.
Oh, look there! Noah, how are you, stranger?
Good, how are you?
Doing amazing, how are things?
Great, they're great.
I wonder what it's like being the biggest music star on the planet right now. I wonder what that's like.
You'll have to ask Taylor Swift.
Man, I can't tell you how much I love this album. I love Stick Season. God almighty, it has been stuck in my head for weeks. I ride the entire train to and from the city. I play it on repeat. I don't know. I know exactly the last song that I got this obsessed with. It was Chais Long by Wet Leg. Man, congratulations. What an incredible last 8-12 months this has been.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. It's been a total trip, and I'm still happy playing the songs live, which is a testament that I think I actually might like the album a little bit. So thank you guys for listening to it, and I appreciate that you guys like it as well.
I wonder, you're a very smart guy. Being this part of the zeitgeist, does it feel weird?
I don't know. I feel like I don't know. It feels cool to like have a lot of people listening to the music and extrapolating their own details from it and like putting it into their own lives and then seeing people kind of form a community around the music is what it's all about. I've been doing this for 6 years and you know, even when I was playing shows for like 300 people, like less than that, I still saw like this amazing sense of community in the audience and among the fans. And I still see that same community as the fan base grows. And I think that's so cool. Like being able to feel like you're creating something that's creating positivity and letting people, you know, vent their feelings to each other and creating conversations around mental health and therapy. Like that's so cool. So if I can be part, I don't know what part of the zeitgeist I'm in, but if I'm doing anything and people are hearing the music and taking away their own, you know, their own challenges themselves and finding ways to deal with it, then I'm happy.
Well, you mentioned music as therapy. The way that you write is so, I don't know, you're so introspective. It feels like it's coming straight from your life. How much of it is therapy for you to put some of this out?
Yeah, I mean, it all, every song has parts of me in it. And every song is helpful for me to kind of figure out what I'm feeling. Sometimes I'll write things down and I don't even know I was feeling it. And then I read the words. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I'm depressed right now. Or, you know, like I am sad and this is sad. And it's cool to be able to kind of figure yourself out through songwriting. So it's always been a way for me to process my emotions. I also go to therapy every week, which is really helpful and allows me to kind of have some clarity and lets me look at what I want to write about next within myself. And yeah, I think what's mostly therapy for me is seeing other people feel better about it and feel like I'm making a positive impact on people's lives, which is just so cool and should be the goal of any artist. And that's been what's been the most healing for me is seeing people find happiness through the music.
When was there a point in your music, because we've talked to people before and we were talking before you got on here about artists that we've interviewed that said, I wrote this song for me. I never intended it to go out.
Sorry guys, one second.
That's
can you
right.
ask that question just one more time? I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah. I was just saying that we have talked to people before who've said, I wrote a song, you know, whatever, that I never maybe intended to be public. It was just for me. And then it went public and they were shocked and surprised that it resonated with anybody else. Was there a point in your life where, you know, I'm guessing you might have been similar. I mean, I don't think anybody sits down and says, I'm going to write this song because it's going to resonate with, you know, 1 million people or 100 million. But at some point you have to make that transition where, you know, you wrote it just for you, but now you realize it hits with other people. Was there a point for you with that? Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I think it started like the first times that I started writing songs about anxiety and depression was just because I was feeling such an overwhelming sense of these things in my life. And then I started putting songs out because, to be honest, I had writer's block and they were the only songs that I had written. I was like, you know what? These songs need, I don't have a lot of other songs. These are the ones that are about sadness and the things I'm going through. And the response was so cool and so supportive from everybody, you know, down to the label, down to my family, but definitely to the fans as well, that it inspired me to keep doing it. And I always say, like, when I was younger and I felt like there was no one else in the world that understood what I was feeling, and I heard a Paul Simon lyric or a Cat Stevens lyric, and for 1 minute I felt like someone had figured me out and that someone knew what I was going through, and I felt like I wasn't alone. And so when I sit down to write, I do try to be as vulnerable as possible, and I never think like, oh, this song is going to come out. But I think, man, if I could provide that little lifeline for some kid somewhere that I got when I was in seventh grade, then I'm doing something important and that vulnerability is worth it. But you know, I don't make music. I make music for me, but I really do also make it for the fans. I think I'm not writing songs to cater to the fans, but they seem to like when I talk about myself and I try to do that for them.
I think that's so interesting that you just said it that way, because so oftentimes some of the songs that I love the most are the ones that crack the code in words that I wasn't able to put together. But then there are ones like Stick Season where you put me into this world that was yours. You transported me from my life and dropped me into the middle of yours. And now I'm experiencing everything that you're feeling. And that is such a, I love it so much, but I'm sure it could freak some other people out. But that's the way that I feel about it. It feels like it's something that you literally were writing for someone to walk around with you and see.
100%. Yeah. I when I tell people I'm from Vermont, they think I'm from Canada and they don't know where Vermont is and they don't know anything about it. Or they think, you know, Bernie Sanders and maple syrup, which are actually very big parts of being a Vermont.
I was going to say maple syrup. That's so funny.
Yeah. And when I was growing up, I would listen to Gregory Alan Isakov, who, and I felt like I was like in the 1800s in Europe, like traveling around, or I would listen to Paul Simon and I would feel like I was in New York in the 70s. And I would, I love being a part of other people's worlds. My favorite TV shows, my favorite books are these like immersive world building experiences. And I really did think going into this record about trying to show people what it was really like, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, about being in Vermont. I wanted to bring people to a different place. You know, like I said, my favorite thing about music is feeling like I'm being transported. Phoebe Bridgers, particularly the new Sam Fender record, does a great job of that.
Yes,
makes you
does.
Feel like
That's
you're
right.
in this person's life, in their neighborhood. And, you know, my story is obviously a lot different, but I'm still from a place that not a lot of people know about and not a lot of people have experienced. And I was desperate to show people that place and show them that world.
It's very interesting that you're writing it for a locale, considering, well, let's put it this way. What is the next album starts feeling like? Are you trying to, you're not going to take someone on another vacation. You're probably going to, you know, maybe it's Seasons next. Maybe it's outfits, you know,
Sufjan Stevens.
Yes. Sufjan Stevens did this.
An album about every single state in the country. And I think, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many he got, but I'm trying not to set a giant endeavor for myself, but what's been really cool about this record is some of the songs feel like they have a larger story to tell. I think about a song like Orange Juice that feels like it tells a story about a moment in time between two people. And I've thought a lot about of expanding those stories. You know, maybe they go beyond New England, maybe they don't, but I've thought a lot about expanding on some of those stories. And, you know, I've tried very hard to not write about New England and to write about different places, but I keep getting dragged back to it somehow. So I have a feeling there'll be some New England imagery in the next project. And I think it's a really interesting place, and there's more than enough material to write about for the rest of my career in Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts.
Well, I mean, maybe Wilkow, Connecticut. It's obviously very defining for you as a human being, though.
For sure. Okay. Yeah, definitely. It's like a gravitational pull.
Well, it's also probably the most troublesome relationship that you've been in your life. You know, it's definitely been the longest.
Yeah. It's been a back and forth for sure. I've moved a couple times and I keep coming back.
Are you still in Vermont then, huh? Are you in Burlington?
I'm in Watertown, Mass. But yeah, I was living in Vermont throughout the pandemic and then moved to Mass with my girlfriend. And now we're a little bit closer to Vermont, which is nice. I was in New York for a while. And I don't know, there's something about New England and the cultural identity there that really feels right for me.
When you write this personally, if you don't mind, is there a song on there that is almost too personal? The one that's probably hits way, way, way closer to home than you even imagined?
Yeah, I think Orange Juice is pretty personal. Just a lot about my struggles with addiction and, you know, addictive behaviors as well as addiction throughout my family and then in my friendships. And then also, it's a song that I had to dig deep into, kind of these unreconciled friendships that I have in my life that was really difficult. You know, I put it into two different people. The story is not about me, but there's all of me in it. And so it required a lot of kind of truth finding within myself, which was hard. And it was one of the only songs, there's another one that I have that I haven't released yet that feel like really personal. And like, I have a hard time playing them because mm-hmm. it makes me feel like I'm back in that space of when I wrote them and kind of, but also I find that the things I want to do least, like therapy or like singing about things that are personal to me, are the things I need to do the most. Mm-hmm. You know, just today, not to bring it back to therapy all the time, but I remember I almost sent my therapist a text like, yeah, can we just do next week? And I'm like, if I don't want to do this right now, it probably means I should be doing it. And so when I think about releasing a song like Orange Juice or, you know, a song like Howling, I find that the tension and the discomfort I'm feeling is usually an indication that it should be in the world, that it's something important for me and the listener.
What is that? Because I don't do it. I've never done it. I won't ever do it. What is that like, though, to be able to go out in front of
But by the way, I'm stopping you there. What a silly thing to say, Barry. Why would you say you're never going to do something that you don't know if you might need? It might be something you need.
Because I'm not going to get up on stage and sing a song that I've written is where I was going. I won't. I'm too chicken. I won't do it. And that's part of where I was going with this. When you do something like that, and I'm always fascinated by this, by somebody who literally puts their heart on a piece of paper and into a song, that has to be tough first. But then to go out and sing it in front of people once has to be really, really tough. But to do it on a regular basis has to be even tougher. Mm-hmm. And then you get that feedback. you know, where somebody comes up and says, man, you really, you, it's like you're reading my diary or something. Mm-hmm. That whole circle is just so fascinating to me. You know, the fact that you would do it, that you would sing it, that you would share it, and that somebody else would identify with it. I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's
Noah. I don't mean to jump in here, but let me give you a little thing about therapy because I've been in for years now, Barry. The first time I ever went through my life and all my problems, I said to Gail, I said, I'm never doing that again. But yeah. Guess what? The second time I did it, I was like, oh, this is getting a lot easier. And then the third time I did, this is getting, I can talk, let me talk to you about my problems now, Barry, because I've got no problem whatsoever. And I got to imagine doing the song part of therapy is the same way.
Well, y'all get it then. Yeah. That's what I'm asking about. Yeah,
totally. I hear you both. Yeah. I think it's a lot like jumping into, it's like a bunch of people telling you that at the bottom of a pit of fire, there's a big cushion and you have to trust yourself to jump into it. But all you know is the fire and all you can see is the fire. And all these people are like, I promise you that there's a big pillow at the bottom. If you land, you're going to be okay and you're going to be better. And it takes a long time for people to make that fall. It takes an incredible amount of trust to tell someone how you're feeling and to be honest about it. For years, I went to therapy and I was never honest. I would just say things that sounded truthful or sounded like they were important or deep, but that was truly never digging into that stuff that really hurt. And in going to therapy and allowing myself to be honest, I was able to be more honest in my music and to be able to make that trust fall on stage as well, to say, I'm just going to say it. This is what I'm going through. This is what the songs are about. And to see people in the crowd of all ages, of all ethnicities, of all sexual identities together, listening to that, hearing that, I think it's important and it's a real platform. And I feel like I'm obligated to share my honesty with them.
Okay. All right. That's it. Or do you do it because it makes the music better? Do you do it because it makes you feel better? Or do you do it because it connects with your audience?
I think it's a combination of all three. That's all I've ever known, really, was writing writing about how I was feeling. I grew up in a house that was incredibly supportive of my mental health issues. We all talked, like literally at the dinner table, we'd be like, what are we sad about today? And we'd talk about it. My mom and I would talk about my feelings all the time. My dad and I would take walks and talk about how I was feeling. It just felt like what communicating was to me, was saying, oh, here's what I'm going through and here's how it feels. And there was always a sense of humor about it. And, you know, when I try to write songs that aren't true to those feelings I have, I feel a little disingenuous. So it seems like my only path sometimes. And when I see people respond to them and react to them and, you know, people say your music's so sad, but I see people smiling and dancing at the shows. There's something really fun about hearing someone else confirm your own sadness and your own problems. I know that because I've been to a lot of great shows. I listen to Bon Iver all day, and it's not it doesn't make me sad. It makes me happy to hear someone else in pain. You know what? And because it makes me feel like I relate to them and that I'm not alone. And when I'm on stage, I see people dancing, and they're like, it's weird. They're like having fun being sad, and I think it's really cool. So I think that's why I do it, just because we can have a shared experience found by someone that makes us feel uncomfortable sometimes.
I love how you say you were faking it through therapy, because I'll be totally honest. My first year, I was just doing material.
Totally.
I was just trying to make my therapist laugh. You know?
Telling
jokes.
And they see that and they're like, damn, this guy's fucked up. Yeah, totally, man. It's so hard, bro, because it's really hard if you've never spent a lot of time like being honest, or like if honesty always comes with a joke or a self-deprecation or like a qualifier. Like, it can be really hard to sit there and talk about yourself just from just from a conversational standpoint. It's like, do I just start talking about myself? It's the first like 5 minutes of therapy are always a little uncomfortable.
You know, I wonder if you think about this the way you don't, I can already answer my own question, but think about it this way. Is songwriting the same as the way that I think of actors? Songwriters, but we talked about this a minute ago. Bonnie Raitt said that every great songwriter's got one great song in them, at least one great song in them. I wonder, the way that I think about actors is the actors that really have a great part. The part is this close to who they actually are. You know, and I think about Leonardo DiCaprio and Wolf of Wall Street all the time. He was so great in that movie because I think he's this close to being the actual person. Yeah, I wonder if the great songs that artists write are this close to their actual lived experience.
That's a great question. I do feel like I'm not much of an actor, and that, like, I was talking about this with my drummer last night. He was like, you got to be an actor, bro. You could do it. I'm like, I think I could only play the guy that's like sad and looks like Jesus. And I'm like, oh, that's just me. You know, I think that would be my Oscar winning part. Yeah, I think the best songs are undeniably honest in some way. I think if you're doing songwriting in a normal way, like you are trying to put some of yourself in it, I think. I can't speak for everybody else, but the songs that I can connect to the most and that I see artists like loving to play, like again, to go back to Sam Fender, like that 17 Going Under song, he seems to fucking love that song. That's an amazing song. That feels like unflinchingly honest to me. So I like to think that the best songs are ones that truly reflect the writer, the creator. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I don't want to sit here and pretend like I have all the answers to songwriting, man.
I hear you.
It's such an interesting thing because like a Johnny Cash, I mean, the beauty of Johnny Cash is you believe every word that he sings, but he didn't kill anybody.
Yep. Yeah.
That you sure, know of. Sure.
That I know of.
That's a good point too.
You know, and I think I asked Jason Isbell that once. He was like, you know, that's the talent of the writer. You know,
yeah. You believe the narrator.
Correct.
You believe the way he's singing it, the way the music's accompanying it, and the way the words are being spoken, that he maybe understands what that world looks like, but isn't a part of it. I think it takes a real skill as well to create stories. Like I look at Stephen King and like a great New England author, obviously. And, you know, he's creating all these incredible stories, these incredibly personal, like horrifying moments in these like young people's lives. Like I know Stephen King didn't live this cause I've read his autobiography, but it's so believable.
That cat didn't crawl out of the grave. We know that.
Yeah, but there's definitely something in there. Like everything's set in New England. No. You know, there's pieces of him in there, and there's pieces of, I think, I don't know, like Isbell is another one of my favorite writers ever. Like, I know he hasn't lived all those things, but I know there's parts of it in there. I think there's got to be parts of you in these songs, you know, even if you're coming up with a story.
You know, I think you just nailed Isbell. You guys share a lot of similarities. He pays really close attention to details that you wouldn't normally think that would matter. I go right back to that song where he makes sure to say your boots were in the hotel, in that hotel in Richmond or something like that. Yeah. Those boots on the floor in Richmond, like that specific detail he wanted to add into the song that, oh, God. I can see those boots and I wasn't even there.
The detail makes the story.
But for you, so you take these songs on the road. Is this the first, like, of how big is this tour for you? Is this the biggest one of your career? Where is this going for you right now?
Yeah, it's definitely the biggest one of my career. I've been touring since about 2017. And have played a lot of fun sold out shows, but the level of like people waiting outside all day and like, you know, there's a whole like controversy about the tickets being so expensive and like the demand being so high. It feels like a real moment in my career, I guess. You know, I feel like you can kind of sell out shows forever if you play the same cities enough, but like I played in Columbus a couple nights ago. I'd never been there in my life and, you know, 3,000 people fit in. So it does feel like there is something happening and it's just so exciting. And I just never take it for granted because I have played those, like, you know, are you guys based in Nashville?
So Barry's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So is Russ sort of it. And I'm in Brooklyn, New York.
Got it.
Yeah.
So I've played, you know, I played Rockwood Music Hall for, you know, like 17 people. And I remember being like, damn, like this isn't much fun. You know, there's not a lot of people here. The sound is bad. So to be able to play in these like amazing venues with thousands of people packing in and some people coming to see if there are tickets, like when it's already sold out, and having two tour buses and having this amazing crew of like people that are so professional. I'm just not taking any of it for granted. And it's like surprising me every day. And like, I'm enjoying every second of it, like truly every second of it. And cause I know how quickly the shit goes away, man. So I'm just trying to enjoy it right now.
Along those lines, I wanted to ask and what was it being like when on Colbert? You're the first person that I've known that's been on. I think it'd be cool. And he's got a pretty, I think he has really good musical taste. So it has to mean something, I would think, you know, as an artist for him to pick you to be on the show. What was that like?
That was really cool. Colbert was, I agree. I think he has great, he curates really great music, which is always fun.
I think John Batiste helps a lot with that, by the way.
John Batiste is such a legend. Yeah. Shout out. Absolutely. Can't forget about him. Yeah, it was my first time doing late night TV. And a lot of times there's these moments that like everyone else makes it more scary than it actually is. Like I did the Ryman a couple nights ago and everyone was like, you nervous? I'm like, no, I was just going to have some fun. And on Colbert, I was like, I'm just going to go out there and play the songs. And I definitely got nervous. The environment is nerve wracking. It's freezing cold. And you know, like you only see Stephen Colbert on TV, And so I saw him and like, I was like, is this like a wax animatronic version of this guy? Like, this is really him in front of me. And it was nerve wracking as fuck. And I saw Steve Buscemi walk by right before I went on. And I was so nervous that I just said, thank you so much. And he goes, for what? And I'm like, okay, I'm fucked.
Yeah. At least you didn't say great work.
At least you didn't say great work. Yeah. True, at least you didn't say great work.
The funniest part is the next time I did late night with Seth Meyers, Steve Buscemi was just randomly the guest again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was crazy.
You guys are taking the show on the road, you and Buscemi.
Yeah. We're cool.
Hey, so when you live in the Northeast, does a festival like Bonnaroo ever go through your hemisphere? Does it ever attach to you? Do you know anything about it? Because I'm not going to lie to you, you're on a place on the lineup that is quite high for a first-time Bonnaroo.
Short-sighted decision, I think. I'm way too high on that lineup. I went to Bonnaroo 3 years ago and my first record came out and it was like the most communal, awesome experience ever. Like these festivals can be so toxic and shitty. Like I don't want to talk shit in any festivals, actually. I probably shouldn't do that. But Bonnaroo was an incredibly, incredibly cool environment. It was so fun. The vibes were so good. People were so kind. You know, everyone was obviously like doing a bunch of drugs and stuff, but like people were still cool, kept their cool and were kind and supportive of each other. So doing Bonnaroo is a dream, man. I can't wait. I wish I could stay there and camp the whole weekend.
I don't mean to interrupt, but did I mistaken? Have you done Bonnaroo before?
Yeah, 3 years ago.
I did the Super Jam. Yeah, I did the Super Jam with like Grizz and Rainbow Kitten Surprise.
How did
and,
you get
Hobo Johnson?
How did you get onto that? Who called you for that?
Dude, the Illuminati put me in. I don't know. I'm not supposed to talk about it. No,
I had no idea.
Illuminati for 4 years. They won't let me in. My management, the Super Jam is kind of like one of those places where if you're not like a fully developed artist or you don't have like a bunch of records, like they can kind of put you on for the night and like get you in front of some people, in front of the bookers and everything. And so I did Super Jam. So nervous. I sang the whole song in the wrong key. It was like with this full band behind me and I fucking blew it, but it was so cool. And it's like the energy at Bonnaroo is incredible.
All right, but you didn't have a Noah concept at Bonnaroo.
No, I didn't. The Noah concept was me trying to find my way to the bathroom when I was too shit faced at the Artist Village.
So you practiced at the Holiday Inn in the convention center. We've sat yep. and listened to that practice year after year after year waiting for our credentials. What song did you screw up? What do you think that you messed up?
I did Wake Me Up by Avicii, and I don't know, man. I was one of those things where you have so long to wait where like all you can do is get more nervous and like drink more like beer. And so I was like just getting like drunker and drunker and more dehydrated. And like by the time I was on, I was like completely uninhibited by how nervous I was. And I was just like singing and I was like, I'm in the wrong key. There's a teleprompter and I was like trying to focus on that. I don't think it was as much of a disaster as I'm making it out to be, but it definitely wasn't my brightest moment on stage.
That's okay. Yeah, it stuck with you enough that makes you want to say, I want to come back to Bonnaroo at some point, huh?
Absolutely, man. I mean, the lineup this year is so awesome, dude. On the same day as Kendrick, I cannot wait to go see Kendrick play. I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, you got a really good day. That Friday's fantastic. Do you know where you're going to be playing yet? Do they have you on one of the two big stages?
I think it might be like the big tent, like the right before you go to the big stages. I don't know. I'm still in. Okay. My music is kind of campfire-y. They're like, let's take them in a fucking tent. Like, I'm not sure yet, but I hope to see you guys there.
Oh my god, I'm so excited for you. Look, I the last year of your life has got to be crazy. It's not many people get to say the most streamed Spotify song of the entire year. So. Congratulations. I love the album. I love the song. I'm very, very excited that at least, you know, my format and radio is starting to come around on it. And if I have to will this thing to happen, I want it to. So congratulations. No, I can't wait to see you come to New York.
Hey, I really appreciate the questions and also the format of the conversation. I just want to say it's fantastic. I love just chatting. You guys are great. So thank you.
Hey, anytime you want to come back, let's do it.
This was so much fun.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much, and we'll hopefully see you soon.
See you, buddy. Thanks.
Thank
Noah.
You.
Have fun in Detroit. Guys. See you, buddy.
Thanks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, it's Barry from the What Podcast.
Hey, it's Russ.
Hey, it's Brian, and we are giving away two tickets to Bonnaroo 2024. These are GA Plus, and they include camping. Russ, how do people get qualified?
We want to hear your top artists to play on the Bonnaroo 2024 lineup.
Call 423-667-7877 and tell us who we should check out. It's the What Podcast. Thanks.
There you go, Will Conn on the What Podcast.
I have a new man crush.
Do you?
I love that guy.
Oh, wow.
That was a lot of fun.
I just noticed as he was hanging up that I might be in trouble with the record label because I just realized I'm wearing an Epic Records hoodie and he was wearing a Republic Records hoodie. And it was Republic Records that did this for us, and now I feel really shitty.
Label wars. You and me, Russ, we're caught. We're caught in the middle.
Can you blur out the Epic Records part, please?
Yeah, we'll Photoshop something. Did you notice what I'm wearing, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a radio station that... Oh, got my old radio station, yeah.
Your old radio station, yeah.
So, Barry, I went from Alt-92.3 in New York, or New Orleans to Alt-92.3 in New York. It's like I have a type.
Yeah, you're type. Yeah. You're typecast.
I have a type.
Playing the type.
Man, I just love the kid. I knew he was going to be a phenomenal chat. I did not know about the Super Jam thing.
Oh,
that's
that
fantastic. I don't think we've ever talked to somebody who's just been a band player of the Super Jam, have we?
I don't think so. First time.
I don't think so either. No, I don't think so.
He's one of those guys you never would have noticed on stage that played the entire run. I want to dive back into that if we had more time. Write that down, because when we talked to him at the festival, I'd love to talk to him. Oh, my God. Why don't we ask him if he's going to be in this year's Super Jam? Damn it.
All right. Get him back. Call him back.
Oh, man. All right. Well, this is something that I'm putting you guys on for Friday. On Friday night, we got to ask him if he's going to be in the Super Jam and if, you know, what the Super Jam was like from the year that he was there in 2017. Is it 2017 or 2018? It was 2021. That's what it was. It was 2021.
No, it wasn't 21. It was 28. It was.
We're still in the year 2021.
Yeah, that's, it's so funny to hear. I mean, just everything he talked about. He's just a person, and then to say I was so nervous. You know, he drank all day, and then he, you know, got out on stage and sucked because he'd been drinking all day. So,
that's so funny.
You know, that is funny. That was great. That was really good. I enjoyed that a lot.
So good. All right. Well, there you go, Noah Conn. I guess he's officially. I guess he's not officially a Bonnaroo first timer. So. You know, I guess we got to find some new first-timers this year.
Just change the label. It'll work.
Give us a call.
Yeah. Taco, Barry Porter. Brad, I'll talk to you next week. You're always trying to do your best.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody, it's Barry from the What Podcast.
Hey, it's Russ.
Hey, it's Brian, and we are giving away two tickets to Bonnaroo 2024. These are GA Plus, and they include camping. Russ, how do people get qualified?
We want to hear your top artists to play on the Bonnaroo 2024 lineup.
Call 423-667-7877 and tell us who we should check out. It's the What Podcast. Thanks. Hey, everybody, it's Barry from the What Podcast.
Hey, it's Russ.
Hey, it's Brian, and we are giving away two tickets to Bonnaroo 2024. These are GA plus, and they include camping. Russ, how do people get qualified?
We want to hear your top artists to play on the Bonnaroo 2024 lineup.
Call 423-667-7877 and tell us who we should check out. It's the What Podcast. Thanks.